I'm Joshua Dykstrom. I'm at the physics department at Duke. I work in a group of Bob Berenger. And I'll be indeed talking about not much math, but mostly experiments. And I would like to thank the organizers for inviting me. And I also have a bit of a cold, so I try to avoid coughing in the microphone, which I will hope to accomplish. I also would like to thank already many discussions with Tom and Karen, Michael, who are some of whom are in the audience here. So yeah, the experiments will be on centrifugal and Marangoni forces in thin films. It's about Newton's bucket revisited. So it raises the question, what is Newton's bucket? Right? So Newton's bucket is a bucket, right? Bucket. With some fluid layer in there. It's all very simple. Some filling height H. Now what you can do with this bucket, you can rotate it, and then any freshman mathematician or physicist will be able to tell you that this will give you a parabolic surface profile, which just comes from the balance between gravity and centrifugal force. Now, what is not readily apparent in this in this problem is that if you rotate the bucket fast enough, the solution, the parabolic solution, will become unphysical because it tries to dip below the surface. Right? There's a critical rotation rate that will do that. Now, in reality, what happens in this case is that for the right choice of fluid and bottom substrate, you'll have a thin film on that on the bottom of the bucket. And it has to be perfectly wetting and so on. So what you can then do is you can look at structure of this thin film, and the radius. You can add Marangoni forces, thermal Marangoni forces, by heating the outside of the bucket while it's rotating and cooling the center, which of course then will create a Marangoni force towards the center. So that's what this talk will be about, an overview of experiments on these thin films under Marangoni forces, centrifugal and gravitational force, and so on. Some experimental details. We use silicon oil in these experiments. The bottom is just a silicon wafer, so it's wetted by the silicon oil. For a size, we use a 30 centimeter diameter bucket. Filling height is usually a few millimeters. Rotation rate is typically one rotation per second. Some less trivial experimental details. We use interferometry to measure the height profile of the thin films. Interferometry, as you may or may not be familiar with, uses a monochromatic light source that shines light on a beam splitter, which is just a partially reflecting mirror. Part of the light will be reflected down onto the silicon wafer, and it will be reflected then back by the silicon wafer. And depending on the thickness of the fluid layer there, you'll have constructive or deconstructive interference of the incoming and outgoing light wave. So that will appear as a pattern of dark and bright patches on the bottom of this bucket, that you can then record through the beam splitter by putting a camera here, right? Now the height sensitivity of this, or the gradient sensitivity for this method, is pretty good because we use sodium light of about 600 nanometers in wavelength, and one fringe, which is a distance between, say, two black lines or so on the surfaces, is the wavelength divided by 2 times the refractive index of the fluids, which is about 200 nanometers. So that will give you a very neat resolution in terms of gradients. However, it will not tell you what the absolute height of the film is, right? Because it is not sensitive to the number of wavelengths in that thin film. This is a typical image, right? You can see here the bucket. It's rotating at this moment. This is a still image. You can see that from the motion blur of this thing that sticks out. There's fluid in there. There's a dry spot, as I call it. The silicon wafer you can see here, it's a reflective part. This edge here is nothing but the edge of the beam splitter that is broken. It's a big glass plate that at some point fell, and, well, it's still big enough, but it's broken. So disregard that in any future images. typical video from which I extract data is shown here. I haven't started it yet, but what you see here is, again, the bucket, right? And I can start it by clicking. Yes, it started. So you can see here the bucket, and at some point rotation will start, right? Like now. Notice also that this looks very blurry. That's because it is blurry. It's just a webcam video, because that's usually good enough to do experiments with. And what you'll see happening at some point is in the center right now, right, you'll see interference fringes coming up, right? And they're sort of round, and they move around, which is not entirely due to experimental incompetence. Sometimes it happens, sometimes it doesn't. It's a bit weird. So I would say that there's more dynamics going on than you would originally think, right? So and then you see this pattern, it evolves in time. So the number of lines here indicates the gradient in the surface height. This is fast forwarded a bit in time. This is all real time, by the way. You see still the evolution of the diffraction pattern evolving, although much slower, right? And at some point, if I have time to this talk well, then you will see this is an evolution to an even later stage, right? At some point, you can stop the rotation also, and then see how, because this part is dry, right? This part is still wetted. You can see how the film collapses back to its original flat state. So there are a few things that we can look at in these experiments. First of all, the dry spot size and the structure in there, the thinning, how that process evolves over time. We can look at the collapse dynamics, and also what I did not show in the previous video, of course, is the effect of Marangoni forcing on that whole dynamics. Now, the dry spot size, if you just naively think that the dry spot size is set by having this parabola cut off by the bottom layer of the bucket, is given by this simple equation, and you can just measure if that works in your actual experiment. So what I do here is I show the spot size, it's a function of rotation rate, and what you can see here, that the experimental data is in the squares, for example, here, is that there is a critical rotation rate where things start to happen, and the line here indicates the fit with the equation of the previous slide. So it worked really well. There's a systematic deviation here that also occurs in the other data sets, which are just the same experiment, but then for different initial volumes, right? There's a systematic deviation, which I'm not sure of where it comes from, but overall the fit worked well. So your naive thought of what sets the size of this dry spot is given by that, just the cutting off the parabola, right? What you can also try is looking at how this H-naught, right, this H-naught, the fit parameter here, how that affects the critical rotation rate at which where the parabola just starts to hit the bottom layer of the bucket. That's, of course, also that's a square root kind of behavior where, of course, you don't really test the mining part of the square root, but at least it goes through. So this is the rotation rate as a function of fluid height, right? And the square root nicely works with the experimental data points. So that's nice. So your naive idea of what controls the spot, the dry spot size at least, works. But there is much more structure, right, in that dry spot. So here you see a close-up of that dry spot. This is a typical size of the dry spot, and what you see is that there are actually three different zones. So in the center, you have a very flat part where you see that this is a light part, this is a light part, this is a dark part, so the total change in height here across this dry spot is only 200 nanometers. So this is the really flat part. Now here there's a second region where you have a few more fringes per unit of length, so there the gradient in the height of the dry spot is slightly higher. And here there's a third region, right, just within this ring, this bright ring, and this set of lines, where you don't see any fringes, but they're still there, right? You just don't see fringes because of the resolution of the camera is limited. So there's a much more fine structure in this dry spot than you would expect just based on having a parabola being cut off. Additionally, another funny observation here is that the dry spot is surprisingly flat, right? What you see is that across a size of 5 centimeters or so, you see a height variation here, which is minimal because you see only destructive interference here, so all the height variation here is within one fringe, or within 200 nanometers, probably even less than that, much less, probably less than 50 nanometers of height variation across a size of 5 centimeters, which if you translate that to a more common unit is a height variation of less than a millimeter over a surface that is about a kilometer in size. which is a funny observation, I think. Now, for the thinning process, what you can look at is just the intensity of a single spot somewhere on your dry spot as a function of time, right? So this is time, so intensity, it's just some arbitrary unit that you can extract from your webcam videos. And what you see is that, as you was also apparent in the video, right, the variation of that intensity as a function of time slows down enormously. So here the variation in time is maybe tens of seconds, and here it's much less than a second. And every time, every sine wave represents the lowering of the height of the dry spot with one fringe length, right, which is 200 nanometers. So this just represents that the fluid layer in the center is decreasing in height, but it's going slower and slower. But what you can measure is then that period time, that period length, as a function of the experimental time, right? So that's what's shown here, the thinning time, the second number of seconds per fringe as a function of experimental time. For example, for a 10 millipascal second fluid here, and what you see is that this thinning time as a function of that experimental time shows a nice power law dependence of slope 1.5. Now, just to make this more comprehensible, maybe, if you have a thinning time, so the dt, the time it takes for a single, say, 200 nanometer height step scales like this, you'll have a height decrease of t to the power minus 0.5. Also, you can do this experiment for different viscosities. Here done for a factor 1,000. You can see that the viscosity affects the time scale in sort of square root-like way, right? So this is it's a factor 1,000 in viscosity, but it's only 1.5 decade or so in a shift in time. So how can we understand this? Well, it's essentially already understood by reading a simple paper by Emsley, Bonner, and Peck from the 1950s already, where they just considered a thin fluid film on a rotating disk where just there's a balance between centrifugal force and the viscous force, which is essentially what we have in the dry spot. But you can disregard the boundary. What happens at the boundary is not important. They did the analysis of this, of the thinning dynamics in this particular situation, and they found this kind of square root-like behavior, and also the square root scaling with viscosity. Something similar was obtained by doing full numerics on the thin film equations by Mihaela, a grad student in with Tom at Duke. So that's understood. Then what you can also look at is collapse dynamics. Can be really short here. This is the dry spot size, right? This is just a single line from a video that you look at the same line and how the intensity profile across that line progresses over time. So here you see a dry spot of a specific size. You stop rotation here, and then you see the collapse going on as the edges of the two sides of the dry spot come closer. And the thing to note here is that this looks linear for me, for my eye, because this is a straight line, right? So this is linear, whereas according to theory and experiments that were done 2 decades ago, this should not be linear. So I'm not sure what's going on. It's hard to measure this endpoint, right, both in space and time. You can't really get a good hold on where the collapse happens, but it certainly does look linear to me, and it's not a power law. So I don't know what happens there. Anyway, you can also measure the collapse time. Collapse time as a function of the fluid height, right? So note that this is log scale. This is also log scale. And you can see that collapse time depends very strongly on the fluid height, although this is less than a decade. Sort of a power law kind of behavior with a -3 slope. Viscosity plays a role. Of course, I have only one data point here, so you should be laughing at me for showing it, but it's sort of, viscosity is sort of a factor 10 effect, right? Even so, the viscosity difference is a factor 10. I think there is a simple scaling explanation for this -3 slope, but I haven't been able to find it both in literature and in my own understanding of the process. So, the effect of Marangoni forces on the dry spot can also be, you can also look at that. So here I will show a sequence of snapshots of an experiment where I show a top view again of the system, where this is initially, I start out with a homogeneous temperature profile across the disk. There's some rotation going on, right? There's a dry spot here, and at T0 I switch on heating at the boundary, right? so then temperature will gradually increase here and also then diffuse towards the center. You can see how that how that affects the thin film. So let me play the video. So this is the first image after 5 minutes. Hello? Yes. You see a fringe pattern occurring, right? So it's not flat anymore. The fringe pattern becomes much more dense. So the slope of the thin film spot is changing. Here you don't see any fringes anymore, but that's just because of limited resolution. If you zoom in on the picture, you actually do see fringes. Right, they're just very densely spaced. And this process continues. After 20 minutes, I switch off the heating, so the thing starts to cool down again. And at the edges, of course, that's where you see it first. The thin film, the dry spot starts to recover again. Gradients become less and less. So this whole thing takes half an hour, typically. Right. And what you can conclude from this is that what happens is the Marangoni force adds sort of bulge of fluid in the center, right, where the dry spot initially was, where the gradient is, I think, just set by the Marangoni stress in this configuration. Of course, with the interference pattern, I cannot measure the actual direction of this gradient. I just know that there is a gradient. I don't know in which direction it's actually increasing. But this is the most reasonable assumption, right? Because it's cold in the center and warm on the outside. You can also see that in the thinning dynamics, if you just look at the thinning time, as I showed you before, as a function of time, it initially follows in the beginning of the experiment where I just have homogeneous temperature gradient throughout the whole experiment. Initially it follows this 1.5 power law, but at some points the thinning time starts to shoot up, right? And that's nothing special. I mean, it's actually just divergence. I have data here where you see that there's essentially no change in the thin film structure. So there's equilibration going on, right? At some point you have reached this equilibrium belt shaped kind of thing, and then your diffraction pattern just doesn't change anymore. So your thinning time, the number of seconds per fringe change, just shoots up. And this is for one particular temperature gradient. This is for two more mild temperature gradients, where you see essentially the same effect. The one thing to note, though, is that the Marangoni stress does not affect this scaling here, the 1.5 scaling at all, which is not what Tom had promised me. He's not here to defend himself. He'll be here tomorrow, so maybe. But this is unaffected. So I think the Marangoni stress is not affecting the thinning rate so much. So the outlook for this research, maybe also the initial motivation, for all this work, has been that we wanted to study the droplet dynamics, the spreading of a droplet under the influence of Marangoni forces and centrifugal forces and so on. Josh will be talking about that this afternoon, right? So that was the main goal. We have also now developed a new setup, which will be completely incomprehensible, this picture for you. What we will have here is Peltier elements on this ring, and I think also most of you don't know what Peltier elements are. So what the Peltier elements can do is that they can both heat or cool the outside ring, so we can make the Marangoni stress acting inwards but also outwards. So that will help us to study the theoretical predictions that Josh came up with in this kind of system, right? You can have the hot center and the cold outside, which will have the Marangoni stress act in the same direction as the centrifugal stress. So that's it, my conclusions. You can do diverse thin film studies in Newton's bucket. Dry spot has a much more fine structure than you might think. See this EVP scaling. The boundary has very little influence on the thinning rate of the film itself. Collapse time depends strongly on H0. I think there is a simple scaling argument for this, but I haven't found it yet. The collapse front is maybe weakly nonlinear, but it looks linear to me. The Marangoni force does not affect any kind of thinning scaling, but it creates sort of non-trivial structure of that dry spot, which is not really dry. And the outlook for future work is then we'll have a new setup where we can actually study droplet dynamics in the same kind of rotating geometry. And I'd like to acknowledge again discussions with many different people and you for your attention.